Today we get to speak to the amazing Rachel John. She is one of West End's most versatile performers, and she's been appearing in successful productions in the West End. She made her first debut in Disney's The Lion King back in 2005 and has gone on to play major roles in We Will Rock You, Sister Act, The Bodyguard and The Girl from the North Country. She opened as Angelica Shilu in 2017 in the West End cast of Hamilton, a role for which she received critical acclaim and therefore subsequently went on to be nominated for an Olivier Award for her performance. She was born in 1980 in Hackney in North London, and as a child her parents have taken her to church in Leighton, where she joined the youth choir. And it was here in the church that she discovered her gift for and her love of singing. And she continues even till this day to be involved in church and singing at church and at school. Although she doesn't come from any formal training in drama or acting, because she started her career as a secretary, and we will learn more about that. Her story is incredibly exciting, incredibly inspiring. And so we're incredibly grateful to have Rachel John with us today. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, very well. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Very good. The sun is shining. It's a lovely day. This time of the year is beautiful. I've got a cup of tea, the sun's shining. It's just a beautiful day. It's a beautiful, beautiful day.
It is. And it's a beautiful day to, you know, have this conversation with you. And, you know, I've got so much that I want to fire away at you. So, you know, I hope everybody's holding on, you know, tight, ready to be inspired by your story. And yeah, so let's get going. So, Rachel, when I personally think of or I meet actors, you know, actresses, singers, comedians, for me personally, they are the most confident people in the world. Individuals with incredibly thick skin, because for me, you go into audition rooms time and time again in front of sometimes strangers or people you may have met before in previous auditions, or they're completely brand new to you, and you just have to put yourself out there. And I know that success rate from these auditions are not always guaranteed, right? So my first question to you, Rachel, is, would you say that you're a confident person? Do you have the thickest of skins out there? And what drives you to keep stepping into that room, not knowing whether you're going to land that role or not?
Well, it's so funny you actually asked me that, because I had an audition yesterday.
Oh, wow.
An in-person audition yesterday. And I say that to say, we had a period of time, which I'm sure we all remember, of the lockdown period, the pandemic period. So a lot of our auditioning style and the way we were doing auditioning, everything moved online. So we got used to looking at a panel through Zoom or Teams or whatever. And obviously when that was lifted and we went back to being in rooms in person, people really struggled with anxiety. They really struggled with confidence. They struggled with being back in front of strangers and knowing how to relate in that way. Wow. So I think I'm back with a group of actors who are feeling a little bit nervous. I felt a bit shaky yesterday, and not necessarily because of the audition itself. I felt prepared. I'd rested well the night before. My voice felt fine. I knew exactly what I had to do and felt really, I was actually really excited about the piece as well, but I just got very shaky, you know, felt quite anxious about it. And I thought, I do have confidence. I've done a lot of things. So where is this feeling coming from? So in response to your confidence question, I think that you will always experience nerves. There will always be some nervous kind of anticipation because you care about it. So your body moves with you. But where the confidence for me comes from is I always ask myself these questions of, who am I going in the room with? And for me, because of my faith, I know I'm never going in alone. And then secondly, I ask myself, am I prepared? And then the third thing I do is I accept that a closed door in this circumstance, maybe you get a no from an audition, a closed door is not a reflection of who I am. It's just practically, I have to think about it this way because I didn't used to. It is about whether I am the piece that fits that jigsaw puzzle, and sometimes I am not. And I have to surrender that. And sometimes that means you are very disappointed. Of nature, my skin is not thick. I'm not, I wouldn't say that I'm the type of person who isn't affected by things emotionally. I am very, very sensitive. So it can be quite daunting to keep having no's, but I'm starting to understand that there is a process and timing is key. And so every time I go into a job and I get that job, I'm so, so grateful. And I keep telling myself, that's okay. It's okay that you had these many no's, because this yes wouldn't have come up if all of those had. So you are daily walking in building confidence, because the room can be scary. It can be very, very weird. I met strangers yesterday and had to perform for them, and I hope they like me. It's very odd. It's very, very strange. So it's so that question is very relevant, because you know, less than 24 hours ago, I was in front of people in a room
with strangers.
Scary, and it was scary. It was scary. It's exhilarating to leave, but it was very, very scary. So.
Amazing. Well, fingers and toes crossed that you get a callback or you get a response on that.
I hope so.
You mentioned there about kind of preparation and then, you know, a mindset. How have you, you know, honed in and fine-tuned, one, preparing for these things, especially, you know, as a person of faith? Do you not just think, God, why are you sending me out if I'm not going to get it? Why not just give me the ones that I'm definitely going to get guaranteed? Or why don't those just land in my inbox? So how do you prepare yourself mentally, you know, spiritually, emotionally, to go for something that's so the unknown? And then how do you settle that mindset? And what have you done over the years to settle that mindset, to trust that actually it's fine if I don't get this, and still for the next call or next time the agent gets in touch and says, we've got something for you, that you're still willing to put yourself out there?
Oh, that's such a good question, because there are some days where it's been such a season of no's, or it's been a season of, I just don't like any of these projects that are coming through because they don't align with me at all. Yeah. It would be really easy to say yes, but in my core, it's just a no. And so that can be difficult, especially when there are bills to pay, or you're trying to move up in your career or push forward or accelerate. You can in the flesh, in your own body, say, I have to say yes to this. But what I have learned is that everything must be prayerfully considered. And also, even when people are rushing a decision and say, I have to know now, I have realized with God as my best friend that there's always 5 minutes. There's always, I'll call you back in 10 minutes. There is always a gap. There's always a couple of minutes to just get in your closet, or sometimes I'm in my car, just pull over somewhere safely and just speak to God about what this is. Is because it can really be a beating on your confidence and your armor, and I'm going back in there again. And sometimes what's quite hard is going back for the same people again and again and again, because sometimes you get repeat calls. So you go about 5 times and 6 times and 7 times. You're tapping that oyster and you're going, I'm going back in there to do the exact same thing. What is this? And I always find I go back to David, I go back to, you know, Esther's, I go back to Joseph's. I always go back to the Bible and look at people that we celebrate as champions and heroes of the faith.
Yes.
And there was nothing easy. It was never like for Joseph, like, you're going to have these dreams and everyone's going to appreciate it and it's all going to be brilliant. It was never David, you're going to be king and it's just going to be smooth sailing. Or even for Esther, or even for Ruth. It's the, you get confidence by reading about the mountains that people have overcome, and you go, actually, through it all, God is doing something beautiful. I meet great people along the way. I interact with amazing people, yes. Even when there's no's, even when sometimes I'm going to an audition and it has nothing to do with the job. It has everything to do with God allowing me to connect with a person or bump into someone. You give a word of encouragement. Do you know what I mean? I think yes. I'm just trying to. So when you see how God so beautifully stitches things together in timelines and in opportunities, you start to realize that on his canvas, sometimes you're just a brushstroke. Sometimes you're part of the whole scenery. And I'm just learning how to surrender to him. I go to auditions with scriptures, sometimes written out on the script or on cards. Or I have, you know, playlists in my ears that keep my faith, you know, upwards and buoyant. So those are kind of, I hope I've answered the question.
Absolutely.
Those are kind of the kind of things in my tool bag that I go, okay, I've gone with all of these things because my confidence is in him. The gift is from him and Absolutely. It's for him. So it's always surrendered. And I always go into an audition and say, you know, Lord, I pray that I decrease so you increase. That's the point, so that people see your glory and see your grace on my life.
Yes.
And so if I'm meant to be with these people and work in this company, you know, I'm praying for health and strength and excellence. But if I'm not meant to be there, that's okay too. Because yes. when I was younger, I was really disappointed when I didn't get stuff. I just thought I'm not good enough, or I'm not thin enough, or I'm not pretty enough. And I think when you grow in faith, and again, you read about those who've gone before us, you start to understand that in his sovereignty, it doesn't always make sense. And sometimes your feelings have to catch up with the fact that he is sovereign. He does care, but it's not always a straight line to wherever we're going in any walk of life. I hope that's answered something.
It does. It does. No, absolutely, Rachel. And even as you're speaking, you know, in my mind, as you were saying, you know, the brush strokes and everything that God does, he is, you know, it's this beautiful tapestry that he is creating. And, you know, the hearers of faith that are already part of that tapestry that we get to look at. But that tapestry is just through the generations and through the ages, we're being weaved into that. And that's just such an encouragement to think, actually, you are part of his masterpiece. And it doesn't need to always make sense, but he is still in control and he is still working in some way, even if it's just for you to have been there, to meet somebody, to be that voice of encouragement that that person needed that particular day. So it may have not been the outcome for you, but you were sent there to be an outcome for somebody else, right?
Yes.
So it's that, the beauty in all of that is what I got from your response. And you also said previously, and you've alluded to it just now in your last response, is you want to be a conduit for making God famous.
Mm.
That's a big statement.
It is, but I feel like that's what I'm here to do.
What does that look like to you, and what does that responsibility mean?
I think that I've taken the responsibility as to say, I am not the owner of this gift. It's been deposited in me to share. I have to keep giving the gift back to God and saying, this is where I am. Is this gift honoring you? In the spaces I'm moving in the lyrics that I'm singing, in the words that I'm saying, does this honour you? And so when there are successes, for example, it was wonderful to be nominated and have an Olivier nomination and have a nod from the industry that I'm in. And ironically, you know, I've been in the industry many years, but it's the first time I was eligible in my career to be nominated and was nominated. And I was very clear that if success had come my way and I had won, I knew who I was going to thank first.
Sure.
That's about making God famous. Because when people meet you at stage door or they contact you via social media or they see you after a concert, there's a lot of applause for you. Mm. Oh, I love when your voice did that, or you look so beautiful, or you did this or you did that. And I think making God famous is telling people very, very honestly where I'm from and why I'm here. A daughter of immigrants whose parents embedded in me that serving the Lord and trusting God is the path to success. So the thank yous and the applause, I'm always, I receive that and I thank you for honoring what the gift is, but I am not the person who's made myself brilliant. I do work hard and I do apply myself, but making God famous for me means that, you know, I brag about him all the time. I'm here because of God. I'm strengthened because of God. I've gone into this audition because God's helped me to not let them see my knees shaking or the sweat bead running down the back of my neck. And that's why I feel like I want to be a conduit of him, because it's through him that I live and I move and I have my being. It's not of myself. Because if you study yourself, you wouldn't go back into rooms and you wouldn't get out of bed and you wouldn't move in this gifting. It's not easy, especially the voice, because the voice is connected to self. So other skills that people have, they can put it on and take it off. And I'm not diminishing any other gift. But when you say, Rachel, it's not just who I am, it's how I sound.
Sure.
So my gift is connected to my identity. When someone says Rachel and they want to know Rachel John, my voice is distinguishable, both my speaking and singing voice. So if something happens health-wise, which is why I always pray for artists, if something happens to you, you take a day off or you take a few days off, but it affects everything. You can't speak to people, you can't sing, you can't. So it can affect you on so many levels when you are a singer. So that's why I keep giving the gift back to God, because it's hardwired into who you are and how you sound and how you communicate in the world, as well as your gifting, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that is very clear, because being a Christian is very much part of who Rachel John is, right? I mean,
yes.
you've sang on songs of praise, all the media outlets have filmed you in the church and with the choir, and you had your album that came out, which was a absolute bold declaration of your faith through those songs and hymns.
Yes.
But why is it so important for you to show yourself in this way, especially in the industry that you're in, Rachel? You know, surely that's a challenge. Surely that's difficult. Do you face any backlash? Do you have people looking at you thinking, oh, there's a Christian? Or have you had to say no to works or projects because of this? Why is it so important for yourself to show yourself primarily and first and foremost as a Christian?
Because it's who I am. I think, again, when you are... How do I put this? I think because I know who I was before Christ, yeah. BC, as we say,
yeah.
Before Christ, I know where he's brought me from. And I know that him pulling me out of severe anxiety problems, emotional problems, not having that stability, it matters to me. When you're free and you're happy about it, it's kind of hard to keep quiet. It's kind of hard to just go... Oh, you know, I'm better now. If somebody's ill, when you have a remedy, you want to share it. You want to listen. Yeah. If you're a bit stuffy, take this. This will work, because this freedom is contagious. This liberty is contagious. The peace is contagious, and so I have had backlash. There will be questions, because especially when there are conflicts between culture and church, people want to question you about it. People want to know, what do you think?
Right.
I always apply myself with wisdom, because I recognize that I'm not, as some people say, I'm not Holy Spirit Junior. My job is not to go around convicting others of sin and making people do stuff or not do stuff. That's not my job. My job and my responsibility is to continue to shine the light of Christ. And when questions come to me, I always exercise that with wisdom.
Yes.
And I also think that correction comes with relationship. So sometimes people just, you can tell when people just want to be combative. I had a project and I don't want to name it because it would be quite obvious, but I had a project and somebody just came straight up to me, you know, during rehearsals and just like, I just, you know, I don't agree with God. I don't like Christians. I think you're brainwashed. It's not nice. And
just out of the blue.
Okay. Lots and lots and lots of things spoken. I didn't really know this person. It was early in rehearsals. And it did, it hit me. I was just like, wow, okay, this is where we're at. So you've already set the tone. Yeah. So there are options there. I can respond. But my option was, I don't have a relationship with you. I don't know you very well. This is a working environment. Mm-hmm. So there are working rules about how we should speak to each other respectfully and not. And so I'm just going to keep an eye on this. And if it's something to raise later with management, then I will. If it's not, then it's not. So I think it's just using the wisdom of knowing, is this a working environment or are we outside? And how do I gauge what this is? Because there is a lot of backlash. There can be. And I'm glad that I'm part of both a church and a family where I can come and air these things and go, listen, this happened to me. Should I have said, is this the right thing to do? What do you think I should do? Because we are walking a little bit of a tightrope between church and culture with some issues. And you never want to appear either complacent or that you're co-signing on things, but you also don't want to seem bigoted and standoffish. So I think that's where you ask the Holy Spirit for wisdom as to what do I do next?
Yeah.
And absolutely. And again, everybody who's gone before us, we know people that have been successful in the Bible have sought the wisdom of God, like Solomon. I need your wisdom. I'm the richest man. But when I've boiled it all down, vanity of vanities, if I don't actually have the wisdom of God and the presence of God, what is success? And I suppose that's always my question. What is it? Because if Solomon had it all and still said, actually, when I've boiled this all down, I've got it all.
Yeah.
It still means nothing. If I don't have your wisdom and your presence with me, then who am I and where am I really going? And what is the bar of success? So I just try to be authentic. I don't hide my faith. I'm authentic with who I am. And if I don't know an answer to something, I just don't know. I'm not going to pretend. Listen, I don't really know the answer to that. Let me have a think about it or come back to you or let me see. Because I don't know. I'm not a theologian at this moment. Yes. And I'm happy to say that too. Because again, I think it must be in a space of relationship. And that's why I don't pick fights on social media. I don't post opinions on social media like that, because I don't always think you can have healthy, constructive discussion and conversation and communication, you know, in a few characters. I don't think it fosters grace and humility and peaceful talking. So I'm sure Proverbs has got a better way of saying it than I have.
But I think that's the old age proverb, isn't it? We should be, you know, quick to listen and slow to respond.
Absolutely.
And sometimes we just respond and we react in our own strength and in our own understanding at that point. And actually that could be more damaging to our faith and to being an ambassador of our faith and the truth that we have access to. So I think you're absolutely right. Wisdom is, you know, number one. That's what, you know, Solomon says, right? You know,
get
wisdom.
The principal thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So get wisdom. Absolutely. Get it. Grab it. Don't let go of it. Your CV, as I've detailed in the introduction to this episode, I mean, it packs a punch, Rachel. You know, the shows that you've been involved in, they're world-class, world-leading shows. The Lion King, Hamilton, Bodyguard, We Will Rock You. And your resume, we could go on and on. For someone who didn't set out to be an actress or go into musical theatre, I know that you wanted originally, you were training to be a teacher and you were a secretary at the time and had seen an advert in the Voice newspaper and had responded to a Lion King audition. And, you know, you've got all these great shows behind you. So we kind of know how it's happened. But when you've now looked back at your life, why do you think this has all happened?
That's such a good question. And you know, there's many times you sit back and you go, why? But I have to see the hand of God in this, because at no point did I voice to my parents or my sister or any of my family members, I want to be a singer or be a performer. I'd never said that.
Oh wow. Okay.
Never. I'd always said, Mum said, from when I was little, I'd get the little toys out and be taking the register and talking to the toys. It was always teaching in some sort of way. And it's ironic because my sister is now a teacher. So that's that. That's that.
That was her calling.
That was her calling. And she loves that. So I think the why of it is it has to be the hand of God, and it has to be, there is a talent. And I think I was saying to you previously, there is the work that you put in. You know, I have a singing coach, I have a dialect coach, I have an acting coach, I have those things, you know, I try to keep fit, I go to the gym, all those things. So there is that, yeah. That the work you put in, but the why, I think it's really God. And I think the storyteller in me, I think I am a storyteller. We are all storytellers in our right. But the storyteller in me just has the ability to connect to a story and display it and tell it. That's what all these shows are about and what our lives are about, because our lives alone are a story. So the why is all to do with how God moves and what his plan was. And I still wake up some days and go, can I do my PGCE now, teacher? Can I go back to uni?
Go to that audition.
Can I please now? But it's funny because now it is teaching. The why is still, it's still there. It's to share and it's to encourage and it's to empower, because story is powerful and words are powerful and songs are powerful. You know, this is God's plan, and I'm on the journey, and I'll stop when he says stop. But until then, I'm still going to keep going and going in rooms and sharing what I have. Exactly what I have.
That's amazing. I think when you mentioned the story of Joseph, and, you know, when he'd originally had the dream and all these stars and people bowing down to him, he hadn't quite understood what that would look like. No. And I think you're so right. So oftentimes we can have dreams and hopes for ourselves and think it's going to unfold in this particular way, but actually it still is a fulfillment of those dreams, but just in a whole different way that God has brought that to pass. So as you were saying, you are still teaching, but you just didn't think teaching would look like this. You thought it would be in a classroom with a blackboard behind you, screaming at children to sit down.
Absolutely. And I think because we're studying Joseph at church at the moment, I think a key thing is the timeline. Because it isn't that God is not, his word is forever settled.
Yes.
So it's not that the word wasn't right, and it's not that the prophecy wasn't there, and it's not that he didn't have the gift. It's just that the timeline was very specific, because he thought, I'm going to be a leader, but we didn't understand, because we get to read the end of the story. So we get to cheat. We get to read the end of the book. So we're like, Joseph, you're going to be fine, bro. Like, relax. But obviously he wasn't at the end of his story. He didn't get to flick through and go, oh, it's going to be okay. What we didn't realize is that because a famine was coming, God was raising a leader to be the solution to the famine and to be the savior of those who would have been in lack, which then turned out to be his family, even though he was in a foreign land.
Yes.
So I, you know, even my own legacy as an immigrant, I had to say, Lord, thank you that even if we come out of spaces where we're in a foreign land, or we are the product of slavery, or we're the product of being imprisoned or not liked for our gift or pushed back or all of those things, you still have the final word. And you're setting me up for something else that I couldn't even imagine. There's no way Joseph thought that those dreams were about him being the solution for this terrible famine. So sorry, if I've gone off piece a bit, but it's understanding sometimes that we will not fully get what this story is, but timeline is crucial, because he may not have had the maturity at that moment to manage where he was going. And he had lots of jobs. He was put in middle management, senior management, over the house, and then over a prison, and then moving up. So I just take, again, doors closing and people not being very nice, or me, maybe I'm at fault sometimes and not being nice to other people. I take all of that as God still putting the pieces of the jigsaw together in a beautiful way, but it's still bumpy and you get cuts and bruises sometimes. Absolutely. And you want to cry.
But you know, you going off piece, keep going off piece, because I just keep getting like tingles as you're talking. So keep going off piece. Rachel, your parents had moved to the UK from Trinidad.
Yes.
And like many first generations, you know, Christians moving in from abroad, the church in that sense, which really is what the church is and should continue to be, is a gathering of peoples. And your mum is a big influence in your life. And you said that one of the songs that you included in your album was purely just because she asked you, and it's one of her favourite songs, which is Blessed Assurance.
Yes.
So you grew up in church and you didn't just go to church and then kind of scooter away at the end of service, but you would stay all day, fellowship all of Sunday, do all the prayer meetings, choir, women's fellowship, the whole shebang, right? Wednesday nights, Thursday nights.
So, everything.
So what does the church mean to you?
Oh, the church. Oh my goodness. I know nothing's perfect. Let me start with that. Yes. Nothing's perfect, and the church is full of imperfect people. But honestly, it makes me a little bit emotional. The church was the first place where I had my best friends. We had youth group. We had summer school. So you developed friendships. It was community. And because we were in so many different age groups as well, our pastor used to make the young people volunteer at the over 60s club and over 70s club during the week. Right. So we'd have to go and hang out with the older people. We would go on yearly trips to Margate and Skegness, and we went with Butlins, and I just don't remember ever not being somewhere. And every bank holiday Monday, we'd drive to Birmingham to another branch, or Wolverhampton, or, you know, South London. So church for me was community. It was fun. I never felt alone. I never felt misunderstood. These are the people that you learn with, you grow with. It was just an extended family. I just thought, I've got loads of brothers and sisters, loads of uncles, loads of aunts. Wow. How is nobody else doing this? I'd be going to school on a Monday and be like, what did you do on Sunday? And they're like, nothing. I was like, I was at church all day. This is amazing. I didn't know anything else. And I think it just gave us a sense of community, respect, values. And I learned about God in a really interesting and dynamic way, because it was really accessible. Like, God was really accessible. I don't know how to explain that. I think he wasn't like a lofty, far idea. He was really close, because people used to testify all the time as well. People get up and testify about things like, oh, I went in the shop and I didn't have any money, and somebody helped me and gave me £5. And there was such jubilation. I was like, whoa, like, people are really excited about the smallest of things. So I started to understand that the accessibility of God was in my everyday and my everything, not just the huge testimonies about healings or things like that, but really small things. And so it really gave me a sense of God being close and accessible. And church was just, it was fun. It was just fun. It was fun, and it was community. And I cannot thank enough those that are now, some of them have gone to glory. They raised us to love God, love people, and serve our community as well. That was really key. So I love church.
So how did you get that personal connection? Because oftentimes, you know, if your parents are churchgoers, it's one of those things that you just have to go along with them. You know, you've really got no choice in this. We're going to church. This is what we do. So what's your kind of earliest faith memory, and why has that particular memory stayed with you?
Sunday school. Our Sunday school teachers loved God, were younger, so they were closer to us in age. So not that far, because when you're younger, you think everyone's old, but you just think, oh my gosh, older people are really old. Like, 30 is just really old. But we had young Sunday school teachers who were doing life and doing family, and really stretched us. So even at the age of maybe 7 or 8, we would have to prepare little words. They'd give us a memory verse for the week, and then everyone would have to prepare a word. like a 2 minute word or a 5 minute word. And so it, you grew in that, you grew in getting the word. And then you were like, I don't know how to speak about this subject. And I remember one of my Sunday school teachers saying, well, you need to pray about it then. You need to, when you don't know how to get help, you have to start asking God for help. So it's like faith gym. I don't know how to explain it. You are learning how to fail forwards, really. We say that a lot in the arts as well. You should be in a space where you can fail forwards because that's progress. So you get a little bit wrong and your Sunday school teacher will be next to you and say, that's not the word you meant. You try this. So it's nurturing. And I knew through that, I remember the first time they asked me to write a poem about who God is.
Wow.
And I wrote this poem. It wasn't very long. I wrote this poem. And then I remember people just praying with me and praying over me. And I knew I felt like a heat in my body or a rush in my body. And they said, this is the presence of the Holy Spirit. And that feeling, that encounter didn't leave me. And I was like, oh, he's like, the Lord is right here. And that is what started me feeling that connection and that intimacy with God. And it wasn't just a fluttery feeling. You then start to see him helping you with your homework and helping you in lots of difficult situations. So I think that's my earliest memory, I think, of having the connection with God and the encounter with God. It's probably about 7 or 8, somewhere there. But Sunday school, our Sunday school teachers are incredibly impactful. They encourage us to pray with other people and pray with other young people. So we were really growing. Like, we were out there. We were like training. and they allowed us to make mistakes and grow in God and see who God really is in a very tangible way and in a non-scary way.
But it's a faith at work, right?
Yeah.
Practically, yeah. Let's do this. It's not just at Sunday school. Let's go out there.
Let's go out. We went in the community. We'd feed in the community. We would, every Christmas, we'd have to go and stand outside Sainsbury's and sing songs and collect money, give it to needy people. The church was open. We cooked twice a week. People came in. So there was just so much social activity and so much. And they kept saying, we're the hands and feet of Jesus. We're the hands and feet of Jesus. So it was in action. And again, I am saying this again, no church is perfect. There's no perfection. Christ is the only one who is perfect. But I think in doing these things, we learn so much about what God cares about. There's so many scriptures about the needy and the poor and the widower and those that are helpless.
Yeah.
And the church in action creates community, creates a safe space, but also goes out and extends the love of God out to people. So I learned that from very, very young. So I'm grateful for those lessons and grateful for those deposits from those Sunday school teachers, because they were walking the walk and talking the talk, basically.
We thank God for Sunday school teachers.
We do. We pray for them and we support them, because the kids are not always the easiest.
Especially, and even now, as a mum myself, I'm so grateful that, you know, for 2 hours I can actually go and worship and have my time with God, knowing that people are caring and loving and speaking life into, you know, my children for those couple of hours. And just that, you know, yeah, it is amazing. And we are beneficiaries, having gone to Sunday school myself and now being beneficiary of Sunday school, seeing it through my kids. It's just this wonderful cycle of life that you see in the church, that you think, gosh, thank God for people who have a heart to serve the children and young people. But Rachel, you've got this amazing kind of, you can just feel it. I mean, we're not sitting side by side or anything, but you, you know, your voice and the way that you speak about God and your faith, it feels like there's this confidence and just this assurance that this is it. As you said, this is who you are. This is what you do. This is who you trust in. But the walk of a Christian, it's never always these high mountaintops or these giddy moments. Well, first question is, can you think, would you be comfortable to share, why did you say, all right, God, okay, let's do it your way. I'm surrendering again. you know, if you could share one of those moments and how you've worked through those valley seasons, I guess, in your life and in your career.
I think definitely I have to go back to our lockdown period and our pandemic.
Was that really hard?
It was really hard. I think for a couple of reasons, and again, this is no offence against our government or how things worked or what our government were doing, but as actors, we were the last people to be included in any sort of loans or schemes or any sort of financial support. Benefit, but we were, support, thank you, that's the word, but we were still required to pay our taxes in a July and a January. That was hard because no work was coming in and things were still going out and I was still trying to do things online and I had a couple things here and there and I was like, Lord, I don't know how this mortgage is going to get paid. I don't feel like I'm at the right body type either at the moment. And when I say body type, I know how I feel when my body is show ready. And because I'm so used to being active, it means I can consume a certain amount of calories where I can eat what I want and not have to think about anything. And that, and then all this weight started to creep on and nothing was happening. And I really, there was a lot of days, a lot of nights of just tears. I was just going, I just don't get this, Lord.
Wow.
Everyone's thinking it's going to pass. It's going to pass. I'm really confident it's going to pass. And it's just like months have gone on and years. Now we're into years of no work.
Yeah.
How is this happening? And I remember one morning, again, just going, I've only got the strength to get up and shower. I can just get up and shower. I know that I've achieved something. And I put the audio Bible on because I couldn't even physically pick up and read because you're trying to draw. It reminded me of a scripture that hope deferred makes the heart sick. You start to feel low to a point where you're like, how do I even look over the top of this? How do I even, like in the Psalms, lift up and look up because my help's coming from the hills. I'm asking for the same things. It doesn't feel like help's coming. And what's going on? And then I always end up back in the Psalms. And I found a Psalm. I can't remember off the top of my head the number of it today. But David was saying, like, Lord, I've cried so much. My bones hurt. And my pillow's wet.
Yeah.
And I feel like my enemies are laughing. And, oh God, where are you? And that's that. I mean, as I got out of the shower, this is what I'm reading. And I'm thinking, okay, that's something. Because at least someone's not saying to me, just say it is well. Just say it's working for my good. At least someone's actually saying what I'm saying.
Let's be
which
honest.
Is, yeah. And that's why I really value David. I love the Psalms. I think the Psalms are a great, honest, authentic songwriters. You know, we really got a snapshot and a look into his heart and lots of different seasons of his life. So I looked at that and then what happens? You read that and you go, yeah, that's me. God, you see, even David felt like that. And then what comes up? Another psalm that says, but soul, why are you disquieted? Why are you troubled? Hope thou in the Lord. And I read another psalm that it was like, you know, if I would have been utterly cast off, I would have been utterly, you know, put out if I didn't think, if I didn't believe, if I didn't know that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living.
Yes.
Lord, you promised you'd never leave me, you'd never forsake me. And slowly but surely, you start to feel these little, it may be a small, small bubble. I'm like, Lord, I don't even need a massive seed. I just need a mustard seed. I just need a tiny bit that just, you know, quickens my spirit again and awakens me again to the truth. And then I've realized even when you get that word, you just keep chewing on it. I've told myself now, Rach, don't expect your feelings to catch up with the truth straight away. It's okay that you're still feeling like, what's going on? But if his word is sure, then the Holy Spirit is going to help my faith get stronger and stronger and better and start to see the goodness. Then I started intentionally journaling. So I was celebrating every win. Woke up this morning, boom, slept more than 4 hours. That's a win. Lord, I give you thanks. So I started making a thank you journal, a gratitude journal. Yeah. And sometimes in it were the smallest of things. Saw a bird today, the sun was out, found a parking space. And I went back to that childhood thing of thinking about in church when people were praising God for things that I didn't think were massive, but it's a faith stirring. It's the iron sharpening iron. It's your spirit coming alive again through the power of the Holy Spirit by going just one foot in front of the other, Rach. I'm not even asking you to run a marathon today. I'm just asking you to take that word, keep chewing on it, hearing it and hearing it and hearing it. And then one day moves into another day, moves into another day, and you will get, it will get better, because it can feel like everything's on pause. It can feel like nothing's functioning. And so I hopefully that's an encouragement, because it's encouraged me to just get what you can and just keep going. Just keep, it's small bites. Like someone said to me, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. I'm not endorsing eating elephants. I just want to say that. But what I am saying is a mountain can be so insurmountable. It looks like this cannot work. And then you just read that again. I know David felt like this, but what did David do? He was like, come on, soul, hope in the Lord.
Yeah.
And why are we hoping in the Lord? Because we've learned about God's character through other testimonies for our own life. And we go, you are faithful though, you know. You've shown yourself faithful time and time again. It may not be a straight route, but you've promised that you'll keep me to the end.
Absolutely.
To the end of this thing. So I'm somewhere in the middle, but you've promised me that you're already at the end. If you are Alpha and Omega, if you are, so you keep asking yourself, is he who he says he is? Yeah, he actually is, you know, and that stirs you up. And it doesn't mean that I still don't wake up some mornings and go, I don't even know today. I really don't.
Yeah.
But because I've walked through that before, I have people around me and I also have tools to go, listen, Rach, just get up, maybe go for a little walk, get a bit of fresh air. Maybe you just need a bit of fresh air. You just need a bit of fresh air.
Yeah.
And while you're walking, you know what, Lord, I just thank you. I thank you today. I can move my legs. I thank you. That's for me practically where I'm at. And some days when your emotions are here, there and everywhere, you just have to anchor to the rock, because Christ doesn't move. So I just cling on and just go, Lord, here I am. I don't feel the buzz of this, or I don't feel active today. I don't feel like I'm myself. Where am I and where are you in all of this? And then I just slowly grab a psalm, I just walk through and take time with myself, because I know he's not going to leave me. I'm not abandoned. I'm not an orphan. I'm not alone. And that alone sometimes just lets you breathe in and out deeply again. So those are my few, those are my few little thoughts about
Wow. You're completely right. I think, you know, the good stuff, the good thing about reading scripture is that when it says it's living, it so is, because it's so practical. So even when sometimes you think, God, can I even say some of these things? Can I even question you, or, you know, shout out to you or pray to you or blame you or whatever? Actually, scripture is full of it, that you can actually say, well, hold on, someone said it before. But I love the fact that there are words, there is a voice to what we're feeling in our hearts in the challenging times. But then there is also the solution in there as well, right? And so that's what it is. You can say, yes, David, that's it. You've said it. It's not me, God. I'm not complaining. I'm not the one murmuring. It's
David,
him.
He's my guy. And he's after your own heart, and he's saying these things. So he's my brother. Yes. I thank God for him. I do. But I would not want to do a day without the comfort and the love of God. Because even in that loneliest moment, or even in that moment of just going, I just feel absolutely just adrift. I still have an example of a God who would walk on water to me. So even in all of that, I would still choose to have the Lord with me. Because he said, wherever I go, I can't be separated from his love. Wherever I choose. And again, David, wherever I choose to put myself, that's where your love can be found. And more than that, it's not, again, a lofty idea. Not only can God's love be found, but it's accessed. I think that's something else. That's a different truth, where I can access it, because love can be a huge concept. And we know human love, we let each other down, we let ourselves down. But the fact that I have a God also who's touched by what I've already been through, he knows, he bore it upon himself. God isn't scared by me saying this hurts or I thirst. Those are words he's already said. But he draws me in and then says, access my love, Rach, access my comfort, access my peace, because that supply doesn't end. You touch it and you draw it in faith, because I am here. I'm close to the brokenhearted. That's a beautiful thing to know, because that means he's not put off by me brokenhearted. He doesn't just come in and go, be strong, you know, this too shall pass, as a flippant thing. He's like, when you're brokenhearted, that's where my strength is made fully perfect and accessible in your weakness. So pull on me for that. You have to pull, like you touch the hem of his garment. You have to draw virtue, because he wants to supply it. And that's where, when I got that fresh revelation that not only are you giving this to me, but you want me to access and take it from you, it just made me fall in love with the Lord even deeper, because no one in the world can promise me that I will always be able to access their best side or their happiest side or their love continually. And so that is a soothing balm to me. And I love him for that. So that's, wow. That's, yeah. That's...
Oh, Rach, that is truth. Truth. right there, honestly. Yeah. Wow. Rachel, we haven't really talked a lot yet about the album that you released, which was, you know, a big kind of personal project for you and one of your heart desires that you have realised. But when we spoke previously, you had mentioned that you had done and gone into a lot of research around, you know, the hymns and the history of hymns and how they were sung at football clubs and how that inspired your album. Could you share a little bit more about that for our listeners? Because they're probably not aware of the church's history and the faith's part in some of these songs that are belted around now that, you know, the season has started again. So can you tell us a bit more?
Lots of controversy with the season starting again. Sorry, I love football. Lots of very poor.
Team that you support?
Well, do you know what? To be honest, I knew you were going to ask me this. And to be honest, because my cousin was a Premiership footballer, we just supported whoever he was playing for. Right. So at the moment, I mean, if there's something going on and it's like a London team versus anyone else, you know who I'm supporting. But if sometimes you have to decide, you know, if it's Manchester, are you red or are you blue? But I just love football as a whole. We've always liked sport in our house.
Right.
And I don't even know where I saw this documentary, but somebody was doing a documentary about Christianity and football. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. What's that about? Because even being in the stands, I was like, I know this tune. I know this song. Where do I know this song from? Oh, we sang it at church on Sunday. So briefly, I saw this documentary and it looked at the history of football. And if I'm wrong, I'm very, very sorry. But this is what I heard. It started off with after church that churches used to play each other in football, playing the sport. And because they used to open in prayer, they used to sing hymns around the stands.
Right.
So stuff like, Guide Me, O Thou Great Jehovah, the chorus, bread of heaven, you know, we know at some football matches, you'll hear them singing, you're not singing anymore. Like, no, that's bread of heaven. That's us. That's our song. Abide With Me, like all these hymns we hear, and it's full of that. And that, again, I was at a football match going, I know this song. Why do I know this song? And Mum was like, that's Guide Me, O Thou Great Jehovah. I was like, I have to find out. What?
Wow.
Why are we singing these songs? And that's the history. Apparently the history is people used to pray before matches and we'd sing hymns. And it was a way to get communities together and it was a way to have fun, I suppose, and also to strengthen faith. And I know some churches still have football teams and football leagues, which is brilliant. But that's... for me was so interesting of having a Hymns album, because even I had the privilege of being a supporting artist for Dionne Warwick on tour a couple yes. of years ago, and the amount of people in this, you know, I think we're on the road for like 6 weeks, about that. The amount of people that would come up and go, "Oh, I'm not religious. Oh, but when you sang that song, I remember that we sing that at a football match, or I sang that at my nan's funeral, or, oh, that was my mum's favourite song." And that's what got me excited, because I thought, wait a minute, this country is full of hymn lovers, but they would never say, "Oh, I love a hymn." But there's something nostalgic connected to it. There's something emotionally connected to these words and the tuning. Yes. And I do also think, maybe I'm biased, I do think that hymns are some of the best songs written, because musically they make sense. They're very, as we say in the industry, sing-alongable. People can join into them. Yes, the language for some people may be a bit, so to speak, dated. I think it's beautiful. So I'm very pro the hymns. I'm just like, oh, I love them so much. And they are knitted and interwoven into our culture and our fabric. People may not articulate it that way, but that's my belief. So I'm sticking with that.
But I notice how you didn't actually answer the question of which team you actually support.
I know, I swerved that. I did that really well.
That's fine. I'm not going to go back to that question again, but I am going to ask you before we yes. you know, start to close off on this this conversation, is you're a big tea person.
Oh, I adore a cup of tea. I'm drinking one right now.
There you go. So you're going to have to tell us. And these are direct questions, so don't try and swerve these ones.
Oh, okay. I'll be good. Go ahead.
Herbal or non-herbal?
Herbal.
Okay. With milk or no milk?
No milk.
No milk. Okay. And then what's next for you, Rachel? What should we be looking out for?
Well, at the moment, it's really nice for me. It's exciting because it's been a little bit of a quieter period. Lots of lovely work going on. I've been doing a few animations at the moment, which has been lovely. A few little bits of voiceover work, which I thoroughly enjoy.
Amazing.
And I was at the Royal Albert Hall a couple of weeks ago doing concerts with a wonderful 90-odd piece orchestra, which was lovely, with four singers. So it looks like the end of the year is going to be a little bit more work back in the studio, which would be lovely. Lovely, exciting singer-songwriting bits to get on with, which is lovely.
Have we got a new album coming out? Are you working on something else?
We're praying about that. Okay. We're praying for all things. We're praying for funding. We're praying for the right timing, as I said before, timeline. So yes, that would be very, very exciting. So just to kind of cap off the year, I think it's going to be a lot more back in the studio and a few little singing projects around. So, and as I say, I'm auditioning, so you don't know. When I come back on, we'll have to talk about how this audition went, because I'm waiting to hear now what's next, whether I'm through to the next round or not. So we shall see.
Wow.
But if that is successful, if that is successful, that starts early next year. So
amazing.
Oh, I've loved speaking to you today. It's been a joy, absolute joy.
Thank you so much. And we're going to get you back on. We want to know about the audition that you got that you didn't tell us about right now that you went for. And I'm going to come back with that question about the football team as well.
I know you will. I'm going to have to plot another way to swerve so absolutely. I don't offend anyone.
But thank you so much, Rachel. It's been a real pleasure. And as I said, just listening to you and all the off pieces, it's just a reminder of the goodness of God and that this beautiful tapestry that you're a part of, I'm a part of, that every individual is a part of, is just, it's glory, it's beautiful, it's wonderful, and it's exciting to see how this tapestry is going to keep building and keep, you know, fanning out and become this beautiful masterpiece.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, I do agree. We, you know, as I said before, we don't get to see the end of the story, but somebody one day will be reading the end of our story and be inspired. So, yeah, glory be to God for what he does and permits us to do and allows us to do. It really is an honour and a privilege. And I'm just humbled by the fact that he's gracious to us. So it's
absolutely
very good.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.